Tribe got a win. Boy, Bauer pitched well. Mike Snyder's got your sports in 4 minutes. And Houston won last night, right?
Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. Your 5 to 9 news feed on News Radio WTAM 1100.
Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. The deal boss in on Will's Ways to Save. And we're going to protect your property today. Matt, what you got for us?
So we've done surveillance cameras. I've kind of tampered a little bit with alarm systems. And today, it's an all-in-one home security solution that also gives you a 360-degree bird's-eye view of your property.
Wow.
The big thing, Bill, is a lot of surveillance cameras, they do one thing really well. They give you a view forward, and some of them pivot to the side. But there aren't really any systems I can think of that go round 360 degrees where the entire console can pivot and capture in beautiful, clear HD display or night vision everything that's going on with your home or small business.
All the way around 360. That's great. Wow.
And then it takes it a step further. The system that I'm testing today, which is called the Z-Moto Pivot, which is that HD system, is also an all-in-one security camera system with door sensors and alarm sensors. So you open the door, you open the window, it tells you what's going on. You get notifications on your phone. Anything is off on your property, you get an immediate notification. And it includes all of the sensors. It has $0 in monthly monitoring fees. And it gets it all done with a really good, easy-to-use app that streams that action to you wherever you are. And keep in mind, Bill, this is peace of mind. It's home security. It's usually a $250 system. Found it on sale today for $79.99.
Wow. Great deal. Great item. Check it out. WTAM.com. Keyword save. The deal boss, Matt Granite. Tomorrow morning, we'll get you ready for some grilling for this spring and summer. Watch him on 3 this morning. Back here same time tomorrow. Thanks, Matt.
Awesome.
Get Mike Snyder Sports. Mornings at 15 and 45 past. Houston won last night, right?
Yeah, the pressure was on. They responded, Bill. Yeah. And you know what happened? James Harden, who's probably going to be named the MVP, he got help from his friends in last night's game.
Underhand dish, quarter three to Tucker all the way, and another one! Little razzle-dazzle from Chris Paul to P.J. Tucker in his sweet spot, the left corner.
P.J. Tucker.
The three.
Yeah, P.J. Tucker with 22. Rockets hit 16 threes on the night, and they held down everybody but Kevin Durant. That was a formula for a victory. Houston wins 127-105. Harden did get his 27, but it took others, and hopefully the Cavaliers, supporting cast of LeBron, will take note of what happened last night. So that series tied one aside. Game 3 at Golden State Sunday. J.R. Smith will not receive any additional penalty for his behind-the-back shove of Celtics big man Al Horford. Smith acknowledged after the game that he deserved to be flagged for a flagrant foul.
It was a good call. I blatantly pushed him. It wasn't like I was trying to low bridge him or something. Just make sure he didn't get it. And it was a good hard foul. I don't understand why they gave me a flagrant.
Yeah, it probably should have been a flagrant two at the time, but to change it now and throw him out of the next game would be wrong. So JR will be a go for game 3. That is Saturday night. Cavaliers, after a day off yesterday, will be back on the practice floor. As LeBron said, they've got to dig in and figure some things out to try to keep things alive in this series. Well, thanks to Trevor Bauer, the Indians got the getaway game in Detroit as they blanked the Tigers 6-0. Bauer, 8 scoreless innings, struck out 10. As Terry Frank Kona put it,
he looked to me like he got stronger as he went, which is really good. You know, he's even his strikeouts were more of them were later in the game. We certainly needed that.
Yeah, they did. The bullpen needed a break, and they got it. Bauer with 10 strikeouts. Indians with another day off today, so they should be rested when they begin the series in Houston tomorrow. At the plate, Michael Brantley continues to get it done. He went 3-for-5 with a homer. Tribe at 21-21 in first place in the division. Day off today. The series in Houston starts tomorrow night. Kentucky Derby winner Justify is the odds-on favorite to win Saturday's Preakness. Justify a 1-2 choice. Only a field of 8 horses will go postward. And in the NHL, the Las Vegas Golden Knights have taken a 2-1 series lead in the Western Final, defeating Winnipeg last night 4-2. Keep in mind, the Knights are an expansion team, and they're playing for the Cup. Home of the Indians and the Cavs. Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
North Korea, the latest on the summit. Bill Zimfer joins us on News Radio WTAM 1100. And looks like Trump's as well. We'll just see what's going on here.
Well, yeah, we have finally heard from the White House, Bill, and as usual, the president, as he normally says, we're going to have to see. We'll have to see what happens. We haven't been notified at all. We haven't seen anything, haven't heard anything from North Korea. So we haven't heard from North Korea as well, although another release in their state media today, not mentioning the summit, but critical of the United States for what they say is the huge defense spending that the United States engages in. And they conclude that the U.S. ambition to dominate the world with strength remains unchanged. So some critical things still coming out of North Korea, nothing to do with the summit, however. But the more you look at this, Bill, the more you think that John Bolton may be the fly in the ointment. Of course, he had some comments he made about North Korea over the weekend. He has had interactions with them before as the Bush administration's chief arms control negotiator. Hey, part of the failure with North Korea has to lie with him as well. He was the chief arms control negotiator in the George W. Bush administration. And back in 2003, North Korea called Bolton a, quote, rude human scum. So they don't like him, and his involvement in this whole process may be a problem here. Also, Mike Pompeo, when he visited North Korea last week, he dealt with the summit logistics, talked about getting those three Americans out of there. But what he did not do was talk to North Korea about their definition of denuclearization. That appears to be a real sticking point right now.
So it looks like some drama. It's the big stage. Trump likes this sort of thing, back and forth, good cop, bad cop. Eventually, though, most think they'll both get to the table?
Well, it looks like it is still on, okay. And at this point, I would say there's a good shot that things are going to happen in Singapore. Yesterday, Pompeo did speak with the foreign minister of Singapore to discuss preparations for the summit. So far, keep your fingers crossed.
Bill Zimper following it this morning. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome, Bill.
I think Rush is back from the golf course. Limbaugh follows the news at noon. Get his take on North South Korea, the latest. See what he thought of Trump's comments, too, about illegal immigrants, some of them quote-unquote animals, right?
Yeah. I always wondered about this. You're at a restaurant. You order a drink. You know, $2.25 for an iced tea. You know, most of that's profit. But if you order something from the bar, where's the profit margin there? John Matarese joins us this morning at News5Cleveland.com. Hey, John, good morning. You came across a pretty interesting piece about the profit margins and what you should or maybe should not order when it comes to drinks, right?
That's right, Bill. You know, we all this time of year, we want a fun drink. You know, it's finally warming up in Ohio.
Right.
And, you know, we want to get out there and maybe sit in an outdoor restaurant and order something fun. But I tell you, a report from Money Magazine says a lot of them are really tough on the wallet, and then some of them are tough on the waistline, and some are bad for both. So they listed some of these drinks that you might want to avoid, and this one was really interesting to me. Straight shots of liquor. Now, I'll have to admit, I'm a beer guy.
Yeah.
I'm not somebody who orders shots, but
right.
People do.
Right.
And they say straight shots of liquor are actually a very bad deal because that shot glass is small. A lot of times they don't fill it up completely, and you're spending $10 in most cases for less than a shot when you're ordering something, whatever it is, bourbon or Jägermeister.
Yeah.
But you're spending $10 for less than a shot. They say a much better deal is to order a drink neat, N-E-A-T, and that's basically getting it in a larger glass without the ice. So it's like on the rocks, but without the rocks. And by doing that, most bars will give you about a shot and a half, because if they just put a shot in a good sized glass, it looks like nothing. So you'll get actually more for your money by ordering liquor neat than ordering it in a shot glass. And you know, I had no idea about that one. They also pointed out Long Island iced tea. Now I know that's one that appeals to probably most 21-year-olds, but they say that is a terrible value because it's expensive. All those different strange shots they put in it. Also, they say a Long Island iced tea contains more alcohol than anyone should consume in a half hour.
Mm.
And I
be careful.
Tend to agree with that one.
Yeah.
Frozen daiquiris. They say that's not a good deal because in most cases it's a lot of ice, it's a lot of sugar, and there's really very little punch to it. In other words, you can go out to that speedy cone, you know, ice
yeah.
cone truck on the sidewalk,
yeah.
and for a dollar get a big, you know, sugary ice drink for what you spend for that $12 frozen daiquiri. So they say that's not a very good drink. Also, Red Bull and vodka. Now, that you say, what about that one? Well, Red Bull, you know, gives you that buzz. And they say that's a terrible drink because you won't notice you're drunk until it's too late and you're almost passed out. So that's one that you might want to avoid.
Avoid that one.
Yeah, so just some drinks that may not be the best value. They say, you know, a glass of wine, a beer tends to be your best value.
And also on the cleanliness side, look, there are a lot of great establishments, dive bars, whatever you want to call them, around. Be careful, though, on the cleanliness level. I mean, look around and keep in mind that's where you're drinking and eating, right?
Yeah, that was a good point they also made, was about beer kegs. And a lot of people don't realize that kegs have lines that run to the tap. So from basically from the back room to the bar,
right,
and then up to the tap, there's a plastic line. Those lines are supposed to be cleaned every few months to keep them clean, to keep them from getting, you know, fungus, munge, bacteria in them. They say if a bar is so dirty that the restrooms are filthy, your feet are sticking to the floor, you might not want to buy a draft beer, because you don't know when the last time is they clean those lines. Your better bet may be ordering a beer in that case out of a bottle.
Interesting piece John came across in Money Magazine. See more at News5Cleveland.com. John Matarese. Thanks, John.
Great talking to you, Bill.
Love the book. It's I Find Your Lack of Faith Disturbing. Mentioned A.D. Jameson would join me on News Radio WTAM 1100. Culture, movies, let's go there. A.D., thanks for the time, first of all.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, Star Wars and the Triumph of Geek Culture. I was reading this, making some notes, thinking, I mean, geeks have always been around. There was at one point they just had their pocket protectors and they kind of knew who to sit with at lunch. But then Star Wars comes along and they have a place to go to and be a part of?
Yeah, something like that. I was definitely one of the ones with the pocket protectors sitting alone at the geek table at school myself. So I remember that pretty growing up. I remember that pretty clearly. Yeah.
Culture and relationships. I think it's interesting, though, that's really a part of this too, though, right?
You know, writing the book, I was trying to look at how, over the past 40 years in particular, you know, Star Wars has changed and how geek culture has changed and being a geek in culture has changed. I mean, it's night and day based, you know, in terms of looking at when I was a kid and today. I mean, the kind of things I was interested in when I was a kid, I'd get beat up if I, you know, tried talking about them with people. And but now I've, you know, tons of people are front and center in the culture. A lot of this stuff's very mainstream, and you don't really have to hide your enthusiasm for it anymore.
I will admit, I go see Star Wars or Marvel. To me, I get my popcorn. I want to go check out for a while. But if you get into a conversation that with somebody who's really into it, you better watch, because they're ready to debate you at times on where these storylines go.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. It's obsessive for sure. That's, you know, that's a big part of the attraction, I think. You know, in a lot of ways, geeks, they like the same things that everybody else does. I think a lot of people like fantasy, like science fiction. Geeks get really into it. They want it to be really realist and immersive, and they also want to be kind of obsessive about it. The same way I think a lot of people get into sports and memorize a lot of stats and know the team's records. You know, in a lot of ways, these are sports for nerds, right? So it's like part of the attraction with these movies and comics and all that, TV shows like Lord of the Rings, TV shows like Game of Thrones.
Sure.
Is like you can, there's tons of characters memorized, there's tons of events, histories, you don't know what's going to happen next exactly, who's going to live, who's going to die, and that's obsessing, you know, geeking out about it, as people say, and obsessing over that is a large part of the fun of it.
A.D. Jameson.
And sharing it online with everybody else.
Yeah, I want to get to that. A.D. Jameson, the book is I Find Your Lack of Faith Disturbing, Star Wars and the Triumph of Geek Culture. Let's get to the internet, though, because that truly is the way so many of us connect and different areas where you find people that like what you like. And that was a real connection for people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big part of why geek culture has changed and really become very mainstream, I think, over the past 20 years. You know, Star Wars came out 40 years ago, and a lot of people liked it. Not everybody became obsessed about it. You know, I did, and a couple other people did. But, like, where would you go to kind of share that obsession, especially if you're from a small town? You know, you might not know anybody else who is as into it as you were. I mean, these days, it's totally different. The past 10, 15, 20 years, whatever you're into, you can find people, other people online. So I think that, in particular, the wider accessibility of the internet is really what's caused geek culture to, you know, come front and center the way it has.
To take me to Hollywood, I mean, and they're going to follow the money. I mean, if they can sell tickets for something, they keep making them. I mean, look up Star Wars. Look up what Marvel is doing. They know they can make money with these big blockbusters, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they hope, that's what they want, more than anything, right? And it's all about money.
as you follow the money normally. And finally, the brand part of this, geeks are also big ambassadors for what they love, right?
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that's also changed in the past, like, 20, 30 years is, you know, Hollywood increasingly wants to make not single movies, but franchises. And franchises they can kind of exploit across a wide variety of different media, different products. And so geek culture lends itself to that because it's kind of sprawling and endless. But then, yeah, like you said, geeks are, you know, they're not shy about their enthusiasm. So they provide a lot of free advertising, doing podcasts, writing books. You know, they want to promote it and hopefully convert other people into geeks as well, get them just as enthusiastic about it.
Do you think the Avengers and the Rebel Alliance will ever hook up at some point? Are we, if you and I talk 20 years from now, is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. I mean, one of the things geeks like to see is they like to see the barriers come down and all the works, you know, join together in a big universe. So, yeah, I would not rule that out.
Good read. Fun stuff. A.D. Jameson, the book is I Find Your Lack of Faith Disturbing, Star Wars and the Triumph of Geek Culture. Good luck with it. Thanks for the time.
Thank you so much.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Let's get out and explore some new place for a drink or maybe a bite to eat. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, joins me. He's writing about tracking down a lot of things when it comes to food and beer and wine and even sports at times and culture. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you, Bill?
Good. Got a couple things I want to ask you about. I've seen you post, and Mark's a great follow on Twitter, too, at mbona30. You can read him in the Plain Dealer and cleveland.com. Some nice recognition for Hoppin' Frog Brewery. This was, Food & Wine Magazine. Tell me about this.
Yeah, Food & Wine came out. There's always a lot of different lists coming out about breweries and everything from the food that they have or places to visit or the best beers to try, because there's so many craft breweries throughout the country, and it's really proliferating. Food & Wine has come out with an intriguing list, 19 craft breweries worth going out of your way for. I found this interesting because you could really, there's breweries popping up in Ohio in very tiny towns as well as all the major markets. But they've included Hoppin' Frog Brewery in Akron on this list. I think that's neat. Hoppin' Frog makes very big beers, very carefully made, well made. They've been around for a while. Fred Karm is doing a very good job. Hoppin' Frog is the only brewery on the list from Ohio, and it's a very good list. There are some tiny little breweries, but there's some very sought after ones. Hill Farmstead in Vermont is kind of a holy grail among beer geeks out there. Dogfish Head in Delaware is on the list. Three Floyds in Indiana. Anyone going to Chicago who's a big beer fan, Three Floyds is in Munster, Indiana, very close to Chicago. But it's really nice to see Hoppin' Frog get this recognition. And the magazine made a point of listing several of the beers that they found are, you know, doing a really good job with. So Hoppin' Frog is over on East Waterloo Road, kind of south of Akron. And Fred's doing a great job.
Great point about traveling. I mean, look, there are people that will be coming through Akron to find Hoppin' Frog because they read about it, right?
Right. Yeah. That's true. And now you have the Summit Brew Path, and Hoppin' Frog is part of that. That's drawing a lot of traffic, even more so to the Summit County and Medina County area.
Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com with me. All right, something new. It's called Nectar Juice Bar. You've come across it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, we cover at Cleveland.com, we really cover a lot of the openings of restaurants, and it really doesn't matter to us whether it's fine dining or a small little place. This one intrigued us because Nectar Juice Bar is a California-based company, a pretty large franchise company, and they've chosen Brecksville as their first location in Ohio. It made sense for them. The couple who owns it are originally from this area, but they have been in Florida for a while. They run a couple of Orange Theories. They've decided to open Nectar Juice Bar. I was very intrigued by this because a juice bar is not a juice bar, I learned. They have a lot of different smoothies and drinks. Mm. They have scoop ice cream, a lot of vegan and non-dairy offerings, very, very healthy oriented. And it's not just a simple case of taking a bunch of sugar, dumping it in with fruit, and then mixing it up in a blender. They really are specific about what exactly is going into these drinks. And for instance, one example is they actually put black pepper in a juice that has turmeric. I hope I'm saying that right. Mm-hmm. But the black pepper draws out the turmeric, which is has good physical properties for your body. Mm. And they even offer you black pepper to put in your drinks. So it's making you think about your body, what you put in it. I found that kind of interesting. It'd be hard for me to give up my pasta and a few other things. But I had a smoothie there. It was a peanut butter and banana smoothie.
Ooh.
It was fantastic because it didn't have the refined sugars or the additives. So I personally really like that. I don't like overly sweet things. And it tasted like you were eating something healthy.
Hey, sounds good. I might want to check it out. Again, we're talking about the Nectar Juice Bar. It's at 8215 Chippewa Road. Ohio 82 and 21. All right, Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. One other place you're not going to, well, you're going to find something good there. It's a malt, literally. Tell me about Brunswick and what they're doing here.
Yeah, what's interesting is, you know, we've talked about beer for a long time, Bill, and we talked about, you know, the local foods movement. The latest thing that's been going on the past couple of years involves hop growing and malt houses. So we're seeing more and more hop farmers crop up in this area. And we're also finding malt houses. Now, several years ago, a father-son team started a malt house on Carnegie Avenue in Cleveland, and they have a lot of local clients. Now there is another one that has just started in Brunswick, and coincidentally, also a father-son team. So West Branch Malts has opened up in Brunswick, and what a malt house does is it takes when barley is grown in the field, it doesn't go there directly to a brewery. It needs to be basically milled and processed in a very specific, orderly way. It's a very scientific assembly line, I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So the barley will go into this malt house. They will get it down into the form it needs to be, and then local brewers can buy it. Now, what's interesting is if you believe in a local business movement or local foods movement, this keeps beer literally extraordinarily local. You're using water that's from our area. You're using malts that are being grown in Ohio and then processed in Ohio, usually just in Northeast Ohio, and you've got hop farms growing hops that you can use as well. Several breweries have made beers with this format. So it's entirely local. I think people really get into that. And the brewers can see their barley being milled. They can go in there. This is very transparent. These malt house folks will let you go in and watch your product that you're buying. So it's another business. It's a tertiary business of brewing, and it's why brewing is such an industry in Northeast Ohio.
Great idea. Brunswick, the West Branch Malts now opening at 303 and 71. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Great follow on Twitter and Instagram, mbona30. Read him in the Plain Dealer and online, cleveland.com, with more about the places we talked about this week. Mark, thanks much. Have a good day.
Thank you, Bill.
We have everything it takes to win.
Cavaliers update brought to you by Levin Furniture, the preferred home furniture mattress supplier to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Getting ready for Game 3 Saturday at the Q. John Michael joins us. Hi, John.
Morning, guys.
NBA last night, Houston comes back, so that series is tied a game apiece. John, that's what we would have liked in Game 2 in Boston, right?
Yeah, no question. You wanted a split there at the worst, but hey, it's a Boston team right now that has not lost on their home floor. The splits are dramatic, home and road for both teams, really. Boston's 9-0 in these playoffs at home. Their road record, just 1-4. The Cavaliers, meanwhile, they're 5-1 in their own building, under 500 away from home. So look, Boston took care of business, but now the pressure shifts. I mean, I think the pressure was squarely on the Celtics for games 1 and 2 to do what they did, not allow the Cavaliers to take home court advantage coming back for Game 3, and they did. So now it's the Cavaliers' turn. But yeah, the pressure has shifted onto the Cavaliers. The big pressure in Game 3, probably, you know, not equally the same pressure in Game 4, but you got to get Game 3. Hopefully they glean some momentum from that, and then we play every other day until a winner's determined. So, yeah, they have some days to regroup. It's the oldest team, you know, left in the playoffs right now for the Cavaliers. It didn't look great. Game 1 didn't look good. Second half of Game 2 didn't look good, but hopefully they have some time to regroup, some time to rest, and I hope we see a different team at home in Game 3.
I think we're all hoping for that, John. I think the gap in games between games is beneficial for the Cavs here to kind of, as LeBron said, dig in and figure some things out. One of the things that struck me even in the game last night out west, Houston got some big games from guys like P.J. Tucker. The Cavs need to get more from other guys besides LeBron and Kevin Love if they're going to win and get back into the series, John.
Yeah, I think it's huge, Mike. I mean, I think this series is so akin to the Indiana series in which LeBron, you know, at times was just dragging people along. And again, I get it. It's a LeBron-centric offense, and it's difficult at times for other people to produce. But, man, you look at some of the numbers, and it's startling. It really is. And those same players were producing in the Toronto series. Yeah, it's a different matchup. You know, going from series to series, Boston is more similar to Indiana in the way they swarm you defensively, come at you with a lot of young guys. So the Cavs have to figure it out like they did with Indiana. And, again, it was a grueling seven-game series. This one, the Cavs hope also was going to go long, and you know, we'll see. They're going to try to figure some things out and move forward. But I mean, it seems simplistic, but I think you're right, Mike. I mean, if he doesn't get help from his friends, it could be a short series, and they badly need it right now.
Yeah, and it's not like they need to get, you know, 25 points from a guy like J.R. Smith, but yeah, they're starting backcourt Smith and Hill with 3 points. That's a number that's just, you can't win when you're starting backcourt totals that. But you said something interesting, John, with Boston. They have been a different team on the road, so a little is on them. What are they going to bring to the table on Saturday? I think it's a question mark as well.
Right, big question. We saw a lot of inexperience in that Boston-Philly series, mostly from Philly. They gave away at least a game, maybe a couple of games in that second round, and Boston has not performed well on the road. You wonder if that's a product of their youth or whatnot, but they do have a lot of momentum now, Mike. I mean, you win 2 games against the defending Eastern Conference champs the last 3 seasons, and that'll give you a lot of confidence. So hopefully the Cavs come out early, do what they need to do. And you're right about, you know, the supporting cast. George Hill, I think, is a perfect example. Game 7, George Hill plays in the second half for 19 consecutive minutes. And to me, if he doesn't play as well as he does, it might have been an early summer vacation. He was terrific, George Hill was, in that Toronto series, at times with LeBron on the bench, playing pick and roll with Kevin Love, two guys who the Cavs desperately need to play well, Hill and Love, in this series. So just hopefully to get him back to form, J.R. Smith's another guy. I mean, his numbers weren't terrific in the Indiana series. They were just fine. They were solid in the Toronto series, not so much in the first 2 games of this series as well. So, yeah, I mean, and again, you know, you hear it's a make-or-miss league, but, man, and you've said it throughout the years, maybe the best indicator of wins and losses for the Cavs has been three-point percentage, whether they're making the shot or not. They did in the Toronto series. They haven't so far here in the Boston series. And we'll see what we're going to get in Game 3.
Jim Jones' take this time tomorrow morning. Cavs-Celtics Game 3 Saturday night at the Q right here on News Radio WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers. John Michael will have the call. Thanks, John.
All right, guys.
WTAM 1100. Good morning, Rosie.
Good morning, Bill.
By the way, yesterday, rare chance for me to be on the golf course, Sugar Bush, our 32nd annual outing to benefit the Hattie Laurum Foundation. I mention this because Cleveland Indians Charities, providing educational and recreational opportunity for youth throughout Northeast Ohio, yet again, a big part of that. And we thank Cleveland Indians Charities for that event and so many that they're involved with in Northeast Ohio. Now, I mention that, guys, because, Rosie, I heard it from Tribe fans. Bullpen, bullpen, bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, yesterday we got a good outing from Bauer, right?
Yeah. There's one way to solve that. Have your pitcher go 8 strong innings. Your starter, and Bauer was terrific yesterday. Probably could have gone the distance, but they wanted to get Cody Allen in there for some sharpening work at the end. But, yeah, when you have the good starting pitching, that remedies a lot. And we'll see what happens here, you know, in the coming games with the bullpen. You know, Allen looked good yesterday. Andrew Miller will be fine. He'll get rolling again. And, you know, Neil Ramirez was certainly impressive the other night, but boy, they really need some of the others to, and it sounds simple, but it's not, but just be what they've been. And talking about Zach McAllister and Dan Otero and some of the others who have labored through this early season. So a shot in the arm yesterday for sure with Bauer going 8 strong innings.
And Jim, a big stretch now starting tomorrow night in Houston, then the rematch with the Astros at Progressive Field, Cubs in between. So this is upper echelon teams for the next 10 days or so.
Yeah, they're running the gauntlet right now. This is as good as it gets. And, you know, the Astros, we talked a lot last year about World Series hangover. Not only the Indians playing in it, but the Cubs winning it. They had a difficult time getting it rolling last year. It doesn't seem like that's the case for Houston. They're playing very good baseball. A lot of that is their pitching is just tremendous. They're easily numbers-wise, the best pitching staff in baseball. As you're looking at a team ERA of 2.5 runs a game. So you do that, you're going to be in every game, and they don't seem to be having much of a World Series hangover at all. So they're going to be tough to handle.
Jim, any real concern right now for Edwin Encarnacion with the sore back? What's going on with him?
I don't think so. He really wanted to play yesterday, and they made a decision just before game time. And I think what we've seen, in situations like that, the Indians are going to err on the side of caution, especially this time of the season. So they figured if they don't play him yesterday, then there's the day off today. He should be good to go tomorrow night. So at least right now, no concerns. It was just wasn't quite there yet yesterday, so they get him a couple of days off here.
One other note from Detroit. Look, yeah, we've had some bullpen trouble, but we left, what, 314 runners on base, I think, Tuesday?
No, Bill, it was only 311.
11, okay.
They have had some trouble. We saw it early yesterday, just getting that run in from third with less than two down. So as good as the offense has been, they do have – it could be better, I guess, would be the best way to put it, because they are leaving some guys out there. But the lineup's lengthening out a little bit and as we go, and I think that might be something that they clean up as they go.
All right, Jim Rosenhaus, Houston tomorrow night, 8:10 first pitch. I know you're busy traveling big time, Major League Baseball. In about 3 minutes, I've got our Jason Nathanson with continuing in-depth team coverage of this.
Laurel.
Yanni.
Laurel.
Yanni. Do you have any idea, Jim? Are you following this story? Laurel.
I've seen it in passing, and I have no idea what it is.
Neither do I. Neither do I. That's why I'm going to talk to Jason about it. Coming up. I didn't know if you wanted to chime in, though, Laurel or Yanni.
If you can get to the bottom of it, that would be great.
What'd you hear there, Jim? What did you hear?
What did you hear, Jim?
It sounded like Laurel to me. I don't know.
There you go.
Okay, I'm with you.
We'll find out more. Jim, thank you. Have a great day. Ask Hammy if he thinks it's Laurel or Yanni, okay?
I'm going to go knock on his door right now.
Go knock on his door. Yeah.